Hello, my name's Dave Emery. And in the next half hour, we're going to continue with our discussions of the network that was created pursuant to the Vice President's Task Force on Combating Terrorism, as we looked at in the text by John Loftus and Mark Ahrens entitled The Secret War Against the Jews, that basically the recommendations coming out of the Vice President's Task Force wound up creating what was a personal spy agency for George Bush, and basically a special White House within the White House. Although George Bush got off scot-free in the Iran-Contra affair, he was in fact the main player in that unsavory bit of business, as he was with the arming of Iraq. The arming of Iraq basically gave Saddam Hussein the military capability, which he used to occupy Kuwait, which led to, of course, the Persian Gulf War. And there are a lot of GIs now suffering from Gulf War syndrome, whose ailment in all likelihood can be traced back to the effort, successful effort, to arm Saddam Hussein with, among other things, chemical and biological warfare capability. We've discussed that in numerous programs, including a discussion with Len Horowitz, the author of Emerging Viruses, Alan Cantwell, the author of AIDS and the Doctors of Death, Ed Haslam, the author of Mary Ferry and the Monkey Virus, and Dr. Garth Nicholson, who has been investigating the role of an apparently genetically engineered mycoplasma in Gulf War syndrome. We also took a look at German and American corporations involved with the arming of Iraq in a pair of half-hour segments entitled Uncle Sam and the Swastika Redux from February of 1998. As I mentioned, although this might seem to be very far afield, the first part of the discussion at any rate might seem to be very far afield from where we're going. Ultimately, we're going to be taking a look at the Waco situation. In fact, not ultimately, but in just a minute. And we're going to be taking a look specifically at the role of people who were involved with the Iran-Contra and Iraq-Gate affairs and the role they played on site at Waco. I've already talked about Mark Richard, who was involved in helping to, let's just say he was less than vigorous in pursuing the truth about the Iran-Contra affair. He also was instrumental in helping to intimidate and suppress the testimony of Jack Terrell. And we also took a look at Oliver Buck Revell, also an individual who was part of these interagency governmental networks and who was, shall we say, less than vigorous in pursuing the truth about Iran-Contra. He also was involved with the intimidation of Jack Terrell. Oliver Buck Revell was the chief spokesperson on site for Waco, and Mark Richard, according to Daniel Sheehan of the Christic Institute, was one of the people overseeing the Waco siege. The Waco situation has cropped up once again. It is properly being investigated. However, I think the spin that's being put on it is not the spin that should be put on it. There obviously were, no, it was not only miscalculation, but there was some serious malfeasance. I do not in any way hold a brief for the Branch Davidians, who appear to be space cases of the first order, yet at the same time that they did not deserve to be treated as they were, and the actual handling of that was an outrage. I would also note that the role of a fellow named Henry McMahon in the Waco siege has never been properly investigated, in my opinion. McMahon was a weapons dealer from Florida who moved to nearby Hewitt, Texas, bought many of the weapons for the Branch Davidians, and then bugged out about a month and a half before the siege began. When some of the Branch Davidians were on trial and wanted a statement from Henry McMahon, bear in mind that the weapons he secured for the group, and he became a recruiter for the group, were one of the ostensible reasons for beginning the siege. Henry McMahon not only didn't appear at the trial, but only had a statement read by his attorney. So I think that the role of Henry McMahon in this siege is something, the entire incident is something that needs to be looked into, and so far has not, in my opinion, not been adequately investigated, in my opinion. As I said, as I'm speaking, in October of 1999, the Waco situation is once again coming into widespread public discussion. I want to note, though, the slanting of the discussion. There remains very serious questions. There remain very serious questions about the behavior of the FBI in this case. However, the tear gas that they used, and which many have alleged began the conflagration there, is frequently being referred to in the media as pyrotechnic canisters. They were not pyrotechnic devices, although the gas was flammable. It was tear gas. It's a type of gas known as CS, and it's relatively common. But they were not pyrotechnic devices. The media, however, has been very casual in referring to these as incendiary devices or pyrotechnic devices. They were not incendiary devices. They were not flares, and they were not white phosphorus or napalm. They were tear gas canisters. One of the key players in the Waco affair, and as we'll see, also somebody involved with the cover-up of the Iraqgate affair, was mentioned in an article about the Waco situation in the New York Times of August 27th of 1999. This is an article by Stephen Labaton, L-A-B-A-T-O-N. It's datelined Washington, August 26th, headlined, Reno Admits Credibility Loss in Waco Case. Subtitled, Disclosures Renewing Criticism of Assault. Attorney General Janet Reno said today that her credibility has been damaged by new disclosures of the use of pyrotechnic tear gas canisters on the final day of the 1993 government standoff with the Branch Davidian cult near Waco, Texas. 6 years ago, Ms. Reno survived the political fallout of her first major test in office, a fiery debacle at the Branch Davidian compound, after which about 80 people, including 25 children, were found dead. Now, nearing the end of the Clinton administration, she finds herself facing many of the same questions about the same incident. Ms. Reno and officials at the Justice Department and the Federal Bureau of Investigation, in asserting that the government was not responsible for setting the deadly fire, have long denied that any tear gas canisters capable of igniting a fire were ever used. But prompted by the disclosure this week of government inventories listing weapons used in the assault, FBI officials acknowledged on Wednesday that some pyrotechnic canisters were used. Again, that's a misnomer. They were not pyrotechnic, they were tear gas. And in fact, it turns out that there had actually been prior disclosure of this particular piece of information. It just had not received the circulation that it deserved. However, more important than whatever loss of credibility Janet Reno has incurred is the name of the person who wrote the final report for the Justice Department that exonerated Justice and Janet Reno of any wrongdoing. And this is an individual who was well worth noting. Skipping down into this article, again from the New York Times at 8/27/99, but the Justice Review was seen by many as a whitewash. The main author of the Justice Review, Edward S.G. Dennis, Jr., found that no criticism of any Justice Department or FBI officials was appropriate. Quote, I find there is no place in the evaluation for blame and no place for fault, unquote, Mr. Dennis said at the time. He said, quote, mistakes were made, unquote, but did not identify who might have made them. The report concluded that the Davidians had set the fire based on three things, an arson report analyzing where the blaze began, infrared pictures taken from an airplane when the fire started that showed intense spots of heat erupting in different spots in the compound at almost the same time, and the testimony of some surviving Davidians. Mr. Dennis said today that the report, quote, was not intended to be a comprehensive, all-encompassing report, unquote. But I would point out something that is not pointed out in this article, and that was, however, pointed out at the time by the conservative New York Times columnist William Safire, that Ed Dennis was the fellow who not only wrote the report that exonerated Janet Reno of any wrongdoing, but Ed Dennis was involved with the Iraqgate affair, and Janet Reno exonerated the Bush Justice Department of any wrongdoing in the Iraqgate affair in her badly attenuated investigation of the Iraqgate affair. We're going to turn next to a book alluded to in the Loftus Aaron's text about the arming of Iraq. It is one of the best books about that subject, and a book that almost did not make it to light, as we'll see here in a minute. The book is entitled Spider's Web, subtitled The Secret History of How the White House Illegally Armed Iraq. It was authored by Alan Friedman, who was a writer for the Financial Times of London. The book was published in hardcover by Bantam Books, but it was published, well, this particular edition is the Bantam edition, and the Bantam edition was copyright 1993. The ISBN number is 0-553-09650-8. Again, the book, Spider's Web, The Secret History of How the White House Illegally Armed Iraq. That was authored by Alan Friedman. And in the book, there's discussion not only of George Bush's role in the Casey Initiative toward Iraq, that was alluded to in the secret war against the Jews that we just excerpted, but there is also a reference to the cover-up of the Banco Nazionale del Lavoro, of that investigation. That investigation, the BNL Atlanta branch, the investigation, I should say, of the BNL Atlanta branch was basically the Iraqgate affair. The BNL's Atlanta branch was the main vehicle in the arming of Iraq. And in the book Spider's Web by Alan Friedman, we read, the Italian ambassador flew back to Washington on March 20th, 1990, his mission clear. His government had told him to use his contacts in the Bush administration to make certain that BNL was not indicted. By the way, the fellow who did this is a person whose name has been in the news quite a bit lately. That is Prime Minister, former Italian Prime Minister Giulio Andreotti, recently acquitted in the murder of Mino Pecorelli, an Italian journalist who was looking into some of the many P2 connections to, among other things, the kidnap and murder of former Italian Prime Minister Aldo Moro. Again, returning to Alan Friedman's The Spider's Web, the Italian ambassador flew back to Washington on March 20, 1990, his mission clear. His government had told him to use his contacts in the Bush administration to make certain that BNL was not indicted. And Petrignani had plenty of contacts, having served as Italy's envoy to Washington for nearly a decade. Within 24 hours of his return, he had secured a meeting at the Department of Justice where three of Thornburg's top aides, Robin Ross, Chief of Staff to the Attorney General, Edward Dennis, Head of the Criminal Division, and Mark Richard, a Deputy Assistant Attorney General with special responsibility for the BNL case. Petrignani informed the justice officials that for the United States to bring an indictment against BNL would, quote, add insult to injury, unquote. The reply he received was reassuring. Quote, why worry now? There won't be any surprises, unquote, said Ross, adding that the Justice Department was tracking the case very closely. Note that Mark Richard, the same fellow involved with helping to harass Jack Terrell, is also helping to control the investigation into the BNL affair, as is the very Ed Dennis who wrote the report exonerating Janet Reno of any wrongdoing in the Waco case. Janet Reno then wrote a report exonerating the Bush Justice Department of any and the Bush administration of any wrongdoing in BNL. Many people in justice, including Mark Richard, were part of the networks that grew out of the Vice President's Task Force on Combating Terrorism. The reciprocity in the two whitewashed reports was referred to by William Safire as one hand whitewashing the other. It's very important to note, though, that Ed Dennis wrote the final Justice Department report on Waco. He also was involved as part of these networks that ultimately reported to George Bush with the cover-up of the BNL. And we've seen Mark Richard, according to Daniel Sheehan, one of the justice people in charge of Waco, involved with shenanigans in both Iran-Contra and the Iraqgate affair. Longtime Washington journalist Sarah McClendon identified yet another person involved with Iraqgate as being on site at Waco, namely a fellow named Richard Scruggs. I do not have the printed source in front of me, but this was in Sarah McClendon's newsletter. She's viewed by many as the dean of the Washington Press Corps, and she identified Richard Scruggs, one of the people involved with the arming of Iraq, as yet another of the Justice Department people on site and supervising the ultimate conflagration at Waco. So with Mark Richard, with Richard Scruggs, with Ed Dennis, and with Oliver Revelle, we have four of the key people involved with the Waco situation, all of them involved with or part of these interagency governmental networks that reported to George Bush and that were the main vehicle for the Iran-Contra and Iraqgate affairs, George Bush's own private detective service. Incidentally, the investigation into the BNL Iraqgate affair was badly attenuated. George Bush himself was subpoenaed to appear at the trial of Christopher Dragool in connection with the BNL affair. However, he never appeared. Very shortly after George Bush was subpoenaed to testify at Christopher Dragool's trial, Vince Foster turned up dead and under very ambiguous circumstances. I'm very suspicious of the official version of Vince Foster's death. However, unlike a lot of Clinton's right-wing critics, I do not view Clinton as the person responsible for the murder. In fact, I don't think Bill Clinton has ever really been in a position of power in Washington. He's sort of the ultimate caretaker president. But I would point out that the last person to see Vince Foster alive, and I'm very suspicious of Vince Foster's death, I suspect it was a message to Bill Clinton. Last person to see Vince Foster alive was Linda Tripp, who was a Bush White House appointee and who had also done sensitive clerical work for not only the Army Secret Intelligence Command at Fort Meade, but for the Delta Force at Fort Bragg. The Delta Force, one of the military's top commando units, obviously deeply involved in counter-terrorist activities. I would note that a blonde female hair was found on Vince Foster's body. I wonder if that blonde female hair might have belonged to Linda Tripp, the last person to see him alive when she served him lunch. A last supper, if ever there was one. Again, the investigation of the BNL affair has been less than smooth. We just took a look at Alan Friedman's Spider's Web and accounts of Ed Dennis, who wrote the Justice Department report on Waco, and Mark Richard, apparently one of the people in charge at Waco, and their role in the cover-up of the Iraqgate affair. We took a look at Richard and Oliver Buck Revelle and their roles in helping to obfuscate the Iran-Contra activities as well. Alan Friedman himself, when it came time to write the book Spider's Web, came under a lot of heat. Research credit on the following goes to a member of the listening audience who got this from the San Francisco Chronicle of Monday, November 8th of 1993. This is an L.A. Times story datelined Washington and headlined, Book Says Bush Worked to Cover Up U.S. Policy of Arming Iraq. It's datelined Washington, and skipping down we read, it's about the book Spider's Web by Alan Friedman that we just excerpted. Friedman said his chief collaborator, Friedman and his chief collaborator were under armed guard provided by the New York District Attorney's Office in the final weeks of work on the book after two break-ins and numerous telephone threats apparently aimed at intimidating them. Quote, there is no doubt that they were being harassed, unquote, said Manhattan District Attorney Robert Morgenthau. Quote, there appeared to be a serious threat, unquote. Friedman said in an interview that he and John Fielding, a producer with ABC News who assisted on the book, stayed in a secret location for 3 months after the break-ins and threats. He said guards provided by Morgenthau's office carried assault rifles and kept watch on them 24 hours a day. So Alan Friedman and John Fielding of ABC News felt the heat when they went to the report the truth about the Iraqgate affair. And bear in mind, again, what Sarah McClendon reported, which is that Richard Scruggs, yet another of the Bush Justice Department people involved in Iraqgate, was also one of the Justice Department people in charge of Waco. The point being that the people really running the on-site management of the Branch Davidian siege were people associated not only with the Bush administration, but specifically people involved with these interagency governmental networks that served as a sort of government within a government. Note that Waco has been not only a major blot on the record of the Clinton administration, it also has been one of the rallying points for the growth of the militia movement as well. We're going to touch on that at near the end of the program. More about the resurrection of the Waco affair. And again, as I speak, in October of 1999, it is back in the news. The following comes from the San Francisco Examiner of Friday, August 27th of 1999. This is an article by Lee Hancock of the Dallas Morning News. It's headlined, Ex-CIA Officer Says U.S. Army Commandos Deployed at Waco. And note that this is a former CIA officer who's breaking this information. One certainly cannot draw a conclusion from that, but bear in mind that George Bush was, of course, head of the CIA, and his son is now governor of Texas and running for president, the odds-on favorite to get the Republican nomination. This article, again, ex-CIA officer says U.S. Army commandos deployed at Waco, subtitled Special Forces Unit allegedly helped in final fatal assault. Again, it's a Dallas Morning News story by Lee Hancock and reads in part as follows. A former CIA officer says that he learned from Delta Force commandos that members of the secret Army unit were, quote, present up front and close, unquote, in helping the FBI in the final tear gas assault on the Branch Davidian compound. The former officer, Gene Cullen, said Thursday that he heard the detailed accounts of the military's active involvement from several anti-terrorist Delta commandos as he worked with them on an overseas assignment in 1993. Whether it's the macho bravo-type talk of guys in the field, I don't know, he said, declining to identify the individuals involved, quote, I have no reason to suspect that they lied. And it didn't just come from one of them. There were three or four guys that confirmed that who were from Delta, unquote. Note the next paragraph. The chairman of the Texas Department of Public Safety on Thursday said evidence in the hands of Texas law enforcement personnel may support the account given to Cullen. Quote, I'm advised there is some evidence that may corroborate the allegation that Delta Force participated in the assault, said James B. Francis, Jr., the DPS official. That's the Texas Department of Public Safety. Note again that the Delta Force, of course, falls under the rubric of counterterrorism, the rubric under which an awful lot of these excesses were committed. And by the way, I'm not necessarily impugning the Delta Force in the Branch Davidian compound. I don't know what exactly their role is. I do find it very interesting that an ex-CIA officer has now brought this to light, as George Bush, the former director of Central Intelligence's son, and the man for whom CIA headquarters is now named, is running for the Republican nomination. Now, note James Francis, James B. Francis, Jr., the fellow who was quoted in that last San Francisco Examiner article from 8/27/99. He's the major focal point of yet another San Francisco Examiner article, this one from Saturday, September 18th of 1999. This is an article by Michelle Mittelstadt of the AP at Stateline, Washington, headlined, Bush Fundraiser Pivotal in New Waco Investigation, subtitled, Supporter Hopes Issue Does Not Become Politicized. I would add, I don't know if they wrote that subhead with tongue-in-cheek, but that should have been excised. Continuing, James B. Francis, Jr. was busy raising money for George W. Bush's presidential campaign and overseeing the Texas Department of Public Safety when he gave the order this summer that reignited the Waco controversy. After inquiries from an independent filmmaker and a lawyer who had long challenged the government's version of events, Francis instructed the Texas Rangers in June to reopen the vaults that contained 12 tons of evidence gathered from the scorched remains of the Branch Davidian compound. Skipping down, though an ardent supporter of Texas Governor Bush, Francis insists politics wasn't the motivation behind a decision he says, quote, unleashed a series of forces that were apparently a lot bigger than what I recognized, unquote. I never dreamed that it would turn into something like this, unquote, Francis said. BS, says Dave Emery. I think that's exactly his motivation. I want to make it clear, I do not in any way hold a brief for what was done to the Branch Davidians. It was shocking and criminal and a bad precedent, but it's important to analyze that event and to understand who was behind it. And it was really the Bush administration that was behind it, although certainly I think some of the responsibility still falls with Janet Reno. She was just barely in office at that point. It reminds me a little bit of the Bay of Pigs, in which Kennedy had barely been in office, inherited an ongoing operation, and then took the blame for what happened. The warrant for the search of the Branch Davidian compound was actually executed in the summer of 1992 when George Bush was president. I would also note the following. Note who has been very active on behalf of some of the Branch Davidians themselves. It's a name very familiar to people who have studied intelligence abuses and also wolves in sheep's clothing. This is an article that begins on the front page of the New York Times of Thursday, August 26th of 1999. It's entitled, FBI Backs Away from Flat Denial in Waco Cult Fire. And the article is by David Stout, Dateline, Washington, August 25th. But I want to note in this article a very familiar name, particularly somebody familiar with the history of the assassination of President Kennedy. Speaking of the Branch Davidian, some plaintiffs are represented by former Attorney General Ramsey Clark. Ramsey Clark's a ubiquitous fellow. He's been all over the world. He also was the Attorney General who attenuated any investigation of the assassination of President Kennedy. He later flat-out helped to suppress Jim Garrison's investigation. He defied a federal court order to release Warren Commission documents to the Garrison investigation. He should have been disbarred at that point. He, however, remained Attorney General. He was the Attorney General when Robert Kennedy was assassinated and immediately announced that there was no conspiracy before any proper investigation had been conducted. There was, in fact, a conspiracy, as those who have studied it know. And he did the same thing earlier that year in April of 1968 when Martin Luther King was assassinated. He, the day after the assassination, before anyone had been apprehended, said there was no indication of a conspiracy. Ramsey Clark has helped to cover up all of those assassinations, is a wolf in sheep's clothing, in my opinion, and I want to note his presence on behalf of the Branch Davidians. Note also that the flammable tear gas, which is a better word than pyrotechnic devices, they were not pyrotechnic devices, it wasn't napalm, it wasn't white phosphor, it wasn't even a road flare, it was tear gas. That actually had been disclosed as revealed in the San Jose Mercury News of Tuesday, September 14th of 1999. This is an article datelined Washington by David Johnston and Neil A. Lewis of the New York Times Papers. FBI referred to gas's use years ago. Justice and Congress had information on Waco siege. And this article basically points out that even though a lot of people hadn't coordinated it, the information collated it, the information about the use of the CS had been known for quite some time. Another thing that I want to point out, too, is that the Waco investigation, in addition to possibly boosting George W.'s candidacy, bear in mind he's the son of George Herbert Walker Bush, the author of Irangate, Iran-Contra and Irakgate, and some of his Justice Department gophers were basically in charge of Waco. Waco was also served as a major rallying point for the growth of the militia movement. I mention this because one of the things that came out of the recommendations of the Vice President's Task Force on Combating Terrorism ultimately were the martial law contingency plans that were put on the books by Oliver North and Company, acting as subordinates of George Bush. We discussed the martial law contingency plans and, among other RFA programs, RFA 32 and RFA 38, in particular in RFA 32. One of the provisions of the martial law contingency plans, which again grew out of the Vice President's Task Force on Combating Terrorism, the same people in charge of Waco, was in the event of the declaration of martial law, paramilitary right-wingers were going to be deputized to serve as federal agents. I note that because the paramilitary right has been growing in direct response to Waco, as well as the Ruby Ridge fiasco, which took place when George Bush was president, and the martial law contingency plans that grew out of the Vice President's Task Force on Combating Terrorism calls for the deputization of these people in the event of a declaration of martial law. And as we've seen, some of the operatives in charge of Waco were some of the people that were operating on behalf of the very networks that spawned the martial law contingency plans. I'd long suspected that somewhere there has to have been a direct link between Oliver North, George Bush, and the militia movement. I learned that a fellow who's been very visible on behalf of the militia movement, a guy named Bob Fletcher, who hailed originally from the militia of Montana, one of the militia groups directly connected to Aryan Nations, had a company that was used by Oliver North for some of the Iran-Contra shenanigans. Fletcher claims to hate Oliver North. I would take that with a grain of salt. It may just be internecine warfare on the ranks of the far right. But note that Bob Fletcher actually had one of his companies used by Oliver North for the Iran-Contra shenanigans. And Fletcher has been very visible on behalf of the militia movement. So do note some of these connections and do not lose sight of the fact, again, that the martial law contingency plans call for the deputization of paramilitary right-wingers. And they grew out of the Vice President's Task Force on Combating Terrorism and those secret networks. And the people in charge of Waco also were involved with those secret networks. People like Richard Scruggs, Mark Richard, Ed Dennis, and Oliver Revelle, all players familiar to anybody familiar with Iran-Contra. That concludes this half-hour segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.